Chapter 4. The next morning, I woke up naked in a plush, comfortable bed. No, there wasn't anyone with me. Get your mind out of the gutter. I just wanted to get a taste of what life would be like once I got that million slugs. I stretched out my arms and arched my back. What a fantastic night's sleep. Unlike my shitty coffin, this room had excellent noise insulation. No neighbors waking me up with screaming arguments or loud sex. No booming hallway conversations bleeding in. No drunk idiots stumbling into walls. And the bed. Oh, I could lie across it widthwise and still fit. Plus, the sheets and blankets were softer than velvet. The bedding felt better against my skin than my own pajamas. The room cost 2,000 slugs a night. When I got my payday from Trond, I'd get a bed like this in my beautiful, noise-proof apartment. I checked my gizmo. 11 in the morning! Wow, I really slept. I slid out of the warm sheets and walked over to the bathroom. The private bathroom. No robe, no dudes checking me out in the hall. Just me and my bladder headed to take care of business in peace. I went through my morning ritual, including an extra-long shower. Private shower. Another thing from my list of future amenities. Water is expensive in Artemis, but it's not like we throw it away. It's a closed system, so what you really pay for is water purification. The hotel room had a gray water reuse shower. The first 20 liters were fresh water. That lasted about 3 minutes. After that, it reheated your used water and gave it back to you. You could be in there as long as you wanted, and you'd only use 20 liters. Important note, do not pee in a gray water reuse shower. I threw on an insanely comfortable terry cloth robe and wrapped my hair in a towel turban. Time to work on the next step of my evil plan. This time I didn't need to do any research. I just needed to brainstorm. I lay back on the bed Jazz never wanted to leave and let my mind wander. The problem. How would I get out of the city? Airlocks won't obey commands from non-EVA guild members. There's a good reason for that. The last thing you want is some untrained dipshit playing around with airlock controls. A misused airlock is a fast and efficient way to kill everyone in a bubble. So, to use an airlock control panel, you have to wave your gizmo over it. It verifies that you're part of the guild. It's a simple, idiot-proofing scheme that's very effective. But no idiot-proofing can overcome a determined idiot. There's a flaw in the system. For safety reasons, airlocks don't have security on their outer doors. If you're in a leaky EVA suit and scrambling to safety, the last thing you want to see is verifying authorization. I just needed someone to operate the controls from the outside. Someone or something. I left the hotel room because the front desk called to say I had to check out or they'd charge me for another night. Then I drove Trigger to Armstrong Down 4, or, as the locals called it, Little Hungary. The Hungarians owned all the metalworking shops, just like the Vietnamese owned life support and Saudis owned welding. I pulled up next to the workshop of Dad's colleague, Josia Strobel, who was apparently named during a severe vowel famine. She was a pressure vessel specialist. When Dad got a contract to install an air shelter, he usually bought one from Josia. She made high-quality product, and Dad's all about quality. I parked Trigger and rapped on the door. Josia slid it open, a crack, peeked out with one eye, and spoke with a thick accent.
"You want what?"
I pointed to myself. "It's me, Mrs. Strobel. Jazz, Bashara."
"You are daughter of Amar Bashara," she said. "He good man. You are a very nice little girl. Now you're bid."
"Okay. Look, I want to talk to you about something."
"You are unmarried and have sex with many men."
Yes, I'm quite the harlot." Her son, Isvan, had banged more dudes than I ever had. I resisted the urge to tell her. "I just need to borrow something for a couple of days. I'm willing to pay you 1,000 slugs for it." She opened the door a little wider.
"Borrow what?" "Your hib."
Josia had been around for the construction of both Bean and Shepherd bubbles. Bubble construction is a hell of a job. Pays well, too. She and dozens of other metal workers had made the slightly curved triangles that stacked on a frame to form the hull. The EVA masters assembled the pieces and added enough rivets to make a shitty, leaky pressure seal. Then life support kept the bubble fed with enough air to counteract the leaks while welders made the real seals from inside. Dad made good money off those jobs, I remember. Ethical metal workers like Josha regularly inspect their work. But how do you look at the outside of the hull without being a trained, licensed EVA master? With the hull inspection bot.
HIB for short.
They're really just RC cars with claws instead of wheels. The outer hulls of Artemis are covered in handles to ensure access for maintenance.
HIBs use those handles to get wherever they want.
Seems inefficient, eh? Well, it's the only way to climb up the side of a bubble. The aluminum isn't magnetic, suction cups and propellers don't work in a vacuum, and a rocket engine would be stupidly expensive.
Why you want HIB?
She asked. I'd worked out a lie in advance. The Shepard relief valve is leaking. Dad was the one who installed it. He wants me to check the weld site. Keeping Artemis at constant pressure is tricky. If people use more power than usual, the city becomes slightly overpressurized. Why? The power becomes heat, which increases the air temperature, and that makes the pressure go up. Normally, life support pulls air out of the system to compensate. But what if that doesn't work? So, as a failsafe, the city has relief valves in every bubble. If the pressure gets too high, they'll open and let air out until it's back to normal.
Your father never makes bed weld. Must be other problem.
I know that, and you know that. But we have to rule it out. She thought it over.
How long you need?
Just a couple of days.
1,000 slugs.
I pulled out my gizmo. Yeah, and I'll pay in advance.
You wait.
She slid the door closed. After a minute, Josha opened the door again and handed me a case. I checked inside to make sure everything was there. The mechanical bug was 30 centimeters long. Its four movement claws were folded into their stow position, and the tool arm formed a 7 shape along the top of the robot. That arm had a high-definition camera on the end and basic clamping and grabbing actuators. Perfect for poking at things and recording the results. Exactly what you need when remotely inspecting a hull, and also what I needed for my nefarious plan. She handed me the remote, a sleek little device with knobs and joysticks surrounding a video screen.
You know how to use?
I read the manual online. She frowned.
You break, you pay for fix.
This is just between you and me, right? I hovered my finger over my gizmo screen. The welding guild's always looking for excuses to shit-talk Dad. I don't want to give them ammo.
Amar is good man. Good welder. I will not tell.
So, we have a deal? She pulled out her gizmo.
Yes.
I fired off the funds transfer and she accepted.
You bring back 2 days.
She returned to her shop and closed the door. Yeah, she was grumpy and thought I was a bimbo, but you know what? I wish everyone was like her. No chit-chat, no bullshit, no pretense of friendship. Just goods and services exchanged for money. The perfect business partner. I did a little shopping in Bean Bubble. It was more expensive than I like, but I needed specialty clothing. Artemis has a small Muslim population, including my dad, so there are a few stores that cater to them. I found a long tan dress with simple colors and a stylish embroidered pattern. It was suitable for even the most conservative Muslim gal. I also bought a dark green niqab. I considered brown or black, but the dark green counterpointed the tan dress for an earthy ensemble. Just because I was planning a heist, that didn't mean I couldn't look good doing it. Okay, you can stop pretending you know what a niqab is. It's a traditional Islamic headwear that covers the lower face. Combined with a hijab, head cloth, to cover my hair, only my eyes were visible. Great way to wear a mask without arousing suspicion. Next, I had to get a new gizmo. I couldn't use my own. That would leave a digital trail of all the illegal shit I was about to do. I could just see Rudy reviewing my gizmo's logs and building a case. No thanks. Life's a pain in the ass when you have a cop constantly on your ass. I needed a false identity. Lucky for me, it's easy to set up a false identity here, mainly because nobody cares who you are. Things here are set up to prevent identity theft, not aliases. If you tried to steal a real person's identity, you'd fail miserably. As soon as your victim found out, they'd report it and Rudy would use your gizmo to track you down. Where would you run? Outside? Hope you can hold your breath. I went online and converted a few hundred slugs into euros. Then I used those euros to buy slugs from KSC under the name Nuha Najem. It only took 10 minutes of internet activity. It would have been faster if I were on Earth, but we have that 4-second ping time from here. I stopped at home and dropped off my gizmo. Time to become Nuha Najem. I went to the Artemis Hyatt, a small hotel on Bean Up 6, with little flair but reasonable prices. They saw a lot of business from ordinary people taking a once-in-a-lifetime vacation. I'd only been there once before on a date with a tourist. The room was pleasant enough, but I'm not the best judge. I only got a good look at the ceiling. The whole hotel was one long hallway. The front desk was a closet-sized kiosk with a single employee. I didn't recognize him, which was good. It meant he wouldn't recognize me. "I greet," I said with a thick Arabic accent. Between that and my traditional clothes, everything about me screamed tourist. "Welcome to the Artemis Hyatt," he said. "Needing gizmo." He was used to broken English conversations. "Gizmo? You need a gizmo?" "Gizmo," I nodded. "Needing." I could see his thought process. He could try to figure out which reservation I was under, but as a Saudi woman, it would be under my husband's name. That would take a lot of pantomime and miscommunication to work out. Easier just to set up the gizmo for me. It's not like it cost the hotel anything. "Name?" he said. I didn't want to be too eager. I looked at him with confusion. He patted himself on the chest. "Norton! Norton Spinelli!" Then he pointed to me. "Name?" "Ah," I said. I patted my own chest. "Nuha Najem." He typed away on his computer. Yes, there was an account for Nuha Najem, and no one had linked a gizmo to it. It all made sense. He pulled a weathered gizmo from under the counter. It was an older model with the words "Property of Artemis Hyatt" stenciled on the back. With a few keystrokes, he got everything set up. Then he handed me the gizmo and said, "Welcome to Artemis." "I think," I said with a smile. "I think many. Moon is much excitement." I had a fake identity. Time for phase two. I brought up the map app on my new gizmo and pretended to navigate with it. Obviously, I didn't need a map to get around Artemis, but it was all part of my tourist act. I wandered inefficiently across town to the port of entry. I carried a big purse, of course. What tourist woman would be without one? Now, for the tricky part. Everyone knew me at the port. I was there every day, and my sparkling personality was hard to forget. That's not ideal when you're trying to sneak around. But today, I wasn't Jazz Bashara. I was Nuha Najem, Saudi tourist. I headed to the waiting area next to the train airlock and joined a crowd of tourists. All the seats were taken and dozens more people stood around. Several families had obnoxious kids bouncing off the walls. In this case, bouncing off the walls is not just a figure of speech. The overstimulated kids were literally bouncing off the walls. Lunar gravity is the worst thing to ever happen to parents. "This is so cool," said a dumb blonde to her trust fund boyfriend. "We're about to take the moonarail." Ugh, only tourists called it that. It's not even a monorail. It runs on parallel tracks, just like trains on Earth. By the way, we also hate it when people call us loonies or when they call Artemis the city in space. We're not in space. We're on the moon. I mean, technically, we're in space, but so is London. I digress. The train finally arrived. I pretended to be enthralled by its approach like everyone else. It was just a single car, not the long-ass trains Earthers are used to. It slowed to a crawl next to the docking port and inched forward until it connected. After a click and a ka-chunk, the round entry hatch opened up to reveal the conductor. Shit! It was Raj. Oh, he wasn't supposed to be there. He must have switched shifts with someone. Raj and I grew up together. We went to the same schools. We were teenagers together. We weren't close friends or anything, but we saw each other every day for most of our lives. My dress and hijab might not be enough of a disguise. He stepped through the aperture and adjusted his uniform, a silly 19th century style navy blue outfit with brass buttons and a conductor's cap. Giddy folks returning from the Apollo 11 site exited the train. Many of them carried souvenirs from the visitor center, lunar modules carved from local rocks, Apollo 11 mission patches, and so on. Once everyone detrained, Raj called out in a clear, loud voice, "This is the 2:34 p.m. train to Apollo 11! All aboard!" He held out a vintage-looking brass ticket shredder. Of course, there were no paper tickets to shred. It was just decoration surrounding a payment pad. I closed the niqab a little tighter and walked with a hunch. Maybe if I changed my body language, I wouldn't be as recognizable. Passengers filed past Raj, waved their gizmos over the shredder, and walked through an antechamber into the train. He made sure there was only one person in the antechamber at a time. He was sneaky about it, mostly by standing in people's way. It was easier than explaining, "If there's a pressure failure, the antechamber door will close. The city will be safe, but you'll die." When my turn came, I looked down to avoid eye contact. My gizmo beeped and popped up a text blurb. "City of Artemis, 75 slugs, train fare." Raj didn't notice me. I breathed a sigh of relief and stepped into the train. The seats had all been taken and I was ready to stand for the whole trip, but a tall black guy saw me and stood up. He said something in French and pointed to his seat. A true gentleman. I bowed to him and sat down. I rested my purse in my lap. Once the last passenger boarded, Raj followed and sealed both antechamber doors along the way. He walked to the front of the train and spoke over the intercom. "Welcome to the Lunar Express. This is the 2:34 p.m. service to the Apollo 11 Visitor Center. Our scheduled arrival time is 3:17 p.m. Please keep your hands and feet inside the vehicle at all times." A snicker rippled through the passengers. It was a stupid-ass joke, but comedic gold to the tourists. The train set off. It was utterly smooth. No rocking, no shaking, nothing like that. It ran on an electric motor, obviously, and the tracks never had to deal with the warping effects of weather. Plus, there wasn't much weight on them, compared to Earth tracks. Each row of seats had a porthole window. Passengers eagerly took turns looking at the drab, rocky landscape. Why did it excite them so much? It's a bunch of gray rocks. Who gives a shit? A frumpy Midwestern woman giggled at her window and turned to me. "Isn't it amazing? We're on the moon!" "Ma'alesh ana ma'aref englize," I said with a shrug. She turned to another passenger. "Isn't it amazing? We're on the moon!" Nothing like a language barrier to make people leave you alone. I brought up an Arabic gossip webzine on my gizmo. I just wanted an excuse to keep my head down. Fortunately, Raj was manning the controls and facing away. By the time we arrived, I had learned all about the latest scandal in the Saudi royal family. The crown prince had cheated on his wives. Two of them had filed for divorce under the Islamic law of Kula, but the other two were standing by him. I was halfway through reading the queen's quote on the situation when the train came to a stop. The familiar sounds of the docking procedure clanged through the car, and Raj shouted, "End of the line!" He walked to the door and opened it. "Apollo 11 Visitor Center, have an excellent stay." We all crowded out of the train and found ourselves in a gift shop. Some folks stopped there, but most of us continued forward to the viewing hall. That entire side of the center was floor-to-ceiling windows looking out over the landing site. A well-manicured docent greeted the crowd as we approached the glass. I averted my eyes. Yet another person I knew. God damn, it's annoying to commit crimes in a small town. Gunter Eichel had emigrated to Artemis 10 years earlier with his stepsister Ilsa. They came because they were ostracized in Germany for being a couple. Yes, really. That's why they emigrated. We don't care what people do sex-wise as long as everyone's a consenting adult, though some folks stretch the definition of adult. Anyway, he and I weren't friends or anything. My disguise would be fine. He waited for people to conglomerate, then launched into his presentation.
Welcome to Tranquility Base. Come on up to the glass. There's plenty of room for everyone.